fighting for America.
U.S. wins 2-1 in dramatic fashion.
Why are we so down with this game?
Team USA with the win. America beat Ghana last night in their first World Cup game.
Do we know where Ghana is?
Fighting for Idaho.
USA now plays Portugal on June 22nd.
I'd rather see a quarterback throw a touchdown or a NASCAR guy taking a bunch of left turns.
Fighting for you.
Hey, you remember this from the last World Cup? Was that the Vavazuzu or whatever? Remember that? Remember we used to play that all the time? Like incessantly?
You can relieve yourself of the guilt of not liking soccer right here.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning. On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, there are some groups in America that really do such a great work. I've followed their work for years, primarily when I worked on the East Coast and now almost 5 years here in the Treasure Valley. It's been a while since we've had them on, but, you know, the Federation for American Immigration Reform does just marvelous work in an area where a lot of people will not touch it because of the controversies and the allegations. They actually host a meeting every year in Washington, D.C., and they invite hosts from across the country to go there to get the true information concerning immigration reform and amnesty and everything else. Ira Melman joins us now to talk about it. Mr. Melman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you here with Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO. So we have the invasion of America happening on the borders. It's not really being covered. What's your insight on what's really happening?
Well, what's happening is a self-induced crisis. The Obama administration has been sending signals to the rest of the world for years that if you come to the United States illegally, especially if you have kids in tow or if you're an unaccompanied minor, that we're going to let you in. We're going to process you through some center along the border and then put you on a bus or a plane and send you to the interior of the country. And unless you commit some really serious crime, nobody is ever going to come looking for you. And so what we're seeing now is just a very rational response on the part of people in Central America to get their kids to the United States. Either they have parents who have already come to the United States illegally and they're trying to get the kids here, or they're trying to send the kids in advance in the expectation that the Obama administration is going to give them some kind of amnesty, and then they'll be able to bring the rest of the family. And so, you know, 3 years ago, in 2011, there were 6,000 unaccompanied minors who showed up at the border. This year, they're expecting 90,000. Next year, they're expecting 150,000. So this thing is just feeding on itself, and it's going to grow because we're not just going to see people from Central America pretty soon. We're going to see people from all over the world who are saying, I want to get in on this deal. They're giving away entry to the United States. I'm going to send my kids. We're going to get in. It's out of control, and this is self-induced. The administration has created this situation through the policies that they have implemented.
How does this happen, these unaccompanied kids come to the border? I mean, you can't really let your kid out of a walk around the block without something bad happening. What's the method behind the madness?
Well, you know, that's actually part of the tragedy here is that you have families that are putting their kids in the hands of smugglers. And these are ruthless criminals. They belong to criminal organizations. They're doing this for the money. They're bringing the kids here. I guarantee you there are kids who are encountering all kinds of things that we wouldn't even want to talk about, that, you know, perhaps even dying along the way. But this is, you know, this is an unfortunate byproduct of a policy that says send your kids to the border. I mean, you have to realize you're dealing with countries where people are extremely poor. There is violence going on. And so if you offer this opportunity, a lot of parents are going to put their kids in these sorts of situations, and unfortunately, there are going to be tragedies along the way.
Let's continue on here at 580 KIDO. What's the consequences of this invasion?
Well, the consequence is, number one, that we are losing sovereignty here in the United States. People are really beginning to perceive that when the president says he's not going to enforce their immigration laws, that's probably the one thing you can take his word for. He really is serious about not enforcing our immigration laws. But what's going to happen is that we are going to be forced to provide for all the needs of these kids who are coming across. You know, when you have minors coming to this country, for the most part, they can't take care of themselves. They're either going to wind up with family. The American people are going to pay for the education, the health care, other services that need to be provided, Or if they have no family here, they're going to have to be housed by the government of the United States and communities all across the country. Just the other day, there was a community in Virginia that was targeted to receive about 500 of these kids. And they said, absolutely no way. I mean, they said, we can't afford to provide education for 500 more kids with no incomes. We can't afford to provide the services that come along with 500 kids. But other communities around the country are eventually going to have to deal with this because, you know, if you have 10, 11-year-olds, somebody's got to take care of them.
Right, and it falls upon us to do this at 580KIDO. What about the dangers on the border that are not reported?
Well, as I said, the smugglers are not nice people. These are criminal organizations. You know, this is just human cargo to them. They will do whatever it takes to get them across. They will abandon them out there in the desert if they feel that they're going to be caught by some Border Patrol official. So people are risking their lives. They're risking their kids' lives. It also ties up the hands of the Border Patrol. While the Border Patrol is dealing with thousands of kids, we don't know who else is sneaking across the border. You have these opportunistic organizations, criminal organizations, potentially even terrorists, who can now take advantage of the fact that the Border Patrol isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing, namely protecting the security of the United States. Instead, they're taking care of kids, and you know they could be using this opportunity to infiltrate personnel into this country, and it could potentially backfire on us.
What about the issue involving the Republicans who continue to push for amnesty? Why are they doing that?
I cannot understand why the Republicans are doing that at this point. The whole premise of President Obama's pitch for amnesty was, hey, I've got the border under control. Illegal immigration is a phenomenon of the past. We don't have to worry about that anymore. And here you have graphic evidence that the border is not under control, that illegal immigration is still very much with us. And yet, for a variety of reasons, first and foremost is they're getting pressure from the business lobby in Washington. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is investing millions of dollars into the lobbying effort for amnesty, for more immigration, because, quite frankly, they don't want to pay American workers American wages anymore. They've already outsourced all the jobs that they can possibly outsource to cheaper labor markets overseas. Those jobs that have to remain here, like construction, hospitality, the service industry jobs, well, they would like to be able to insource the workers who will work more cheaply than Americans. And so they're putting a lot of money into this lobbying effort. The Republicans are being influenced by this. And there's also this perception that if somehow they just get behind amnesty for illegal aliens, that millions of voters who are dependent on government service are going to suddenly come flocking to the Republican Party and vote for them, which is sheer fantasy.
Speaking of the Republicans, our own Congressman Labrador involved in the immigration issue. Now, you have a no amnesty pledge. Has Congressman Labrador signed that?
I am not aware that he has or he hasn't. I suspect that he has not, but I don't know for sure. What I do know is that Congressman Labrador last year was part of the so-called House Gang of Eight, which was working on some kind of deal, you know, amnesty in exchange for assurances that the borders would be secured, that immigration laws would be enforced, the same failed deal that we offered in 1986 and put us in the situation in the first place. But ultimately, Congressman Labrador did recognize the futility of that effort, and he backed out. He said, look, I'm not going to be part of this charade. It's hard to pin down where he is on this. He's now running for a leadership position in the House. We would love to hear him come out and say definitively that, you know, look, we're just not going to do this deal again. That first and foremost, our immigration laws exist to protect the interests of the American people. The American people have been let down countless times. Rather than work out a deal that rewards the people who broke our laws, let's go back and fulfill the promises that have been made to the American people for decades now and have never been kept. So, you know, what we would like to see him do is recognize that our immigration laws are there to serve and protect the interests of the American people, and that we have not, as a nation, fulfilled those promises that we've made in the past.
But on the other hand, Congressman Labrador is in favor of a guest worker program because he argues that we don't have enough smart people here in America.
Well, you know, you hear this from various members of Congress. You know, there are jobs Americans can't do. There are jobs Americans won't do. There are jobs Americans are too stupid to do. There are jobs Americans are too lazy to do. None of this is true. Americans will do just about any job that needs to be done in this country, provided that they are given a decent work wage, decent working conditions. And one of the things we have allowed the illegal immigration situation to do is to undermine a lot of jobs in this country to a point where Americans reject the wages, they reject the working conditions. Look, you know, Silicon Valley is not short of qualified labor in this country. We have thousands, perhaps even millions, of qualified engineers in this country who have gone on to work in other fields simply because they can't find employment in the high-tech trades. The companies in Silicon Valley, like, you know, just like the farmers, they want to be able to bring in workers who will work for the wages they determine, for the conditions that they determine. And so they're pushing for more guest workers to come in from overseas to fill jobs that could easily be filled by American workers who are qualified.
Mr. Melman, we appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
All right. Fair.org for more information.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
K Millie in the morning, 580 KIDO. Joining us now from Judicial Watch, our great friend Chris Farrell. Chris, good morning.
Great to be on with you, Kevin. How are you?
You know, we admire your work, nonpartisan truth-telling, and it never ends. Do you believe, and you were just as diligent, just as hard on the Bush administration as the Obama administration, have we really gone 5 yards past the Rubicon or 100 yards past the Rubicon, or even further when we're talking about credibility, when we're talking about the law and this administration?
Well, we can check in with Susan Rice and get her opinion on that. I mean, she's a serial liar, right?
Yes.
How many Sunday talk shows is she going to go on and lie about things? So, yeah, I mean, the laughter is the best the best means of detecting just how bad things are. You know, people laugh at identification with things, and so when this administration's credibility is less than zero.
Well, the troubling part about this, and I even caught myself in mid commentary. I was trying to talk about the Washington Redskins, and I'm going, look, these guys have the audacity to go after the Redskins when the hard drives now from the IRS emails have been destroyed, and there's no marching in their streets, there's no vavazuzu, there's nothing, there's no response.
It's astounding. I mean, I want to know where all the protesters are that were out in Lafayette Square protesting Bush. Where did they all go?
Exactly.
Is it that Soros stopped writing checks to have these people show up? Or, you know, what do you think it is?
I think we need to occupy our government.
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, I guess it isn't really very reassuring, but there is a good side to it, and that is that most Americans are very busy leading their lives, going to work, getting the kids out the door to school, paying the mortgage, paying the car payment, doing all those sorts of everyday things. And in large part, the day-to-day existence is really not affected by the various shenanigans of this administration. That is somewhat reassuring, but there is a broader, more disturbing pattern, and that is the incrementalism, the slow march through the institutions that these ideologues, and they are socialist ideologues, that they're having with their sort of corrosive change to how the country operates. So there's two perspectives, really, to look at it. I guess one's bottom-up, the other one's top-down. They're both equally true and real. It's just that one is slow motion, and the other one is just sort of a day-in, day-out kind of thing.
Well, let's get to it. This is something that your organization, Judicial Watch, has gotten farther than Congress, than the government, than anyone else, than President Obama and Eric Holder are comfortable with. Now we have the disclosures that the emails have been destroyed. And yesterday, I guess a couple days ago, published report that the Republicans now have enough votes in Congress to impeach, but they won't do it. Daryl Issa says the emails just don't get blown up. Your take on what's going on with the IRS and the 2 years of emails from Lois Lerner that possibly detail persecution, prosecution of people that were conservative or Christians or people that disagreed with the administration?
Well, let me claim full credit, which is something I don't usually do, but the only reason anybody knows anything about IRS shenanigans and Lois Lerner is because Judicial Watch sued, can get in front of a federal judge, and compel the IRS to produce records to us. The records obtained by Congress are a fraction of what we obtained, and most of their records were highly redacted, meaning they were blacked out. So the only way anybody knows anything about this, frankly, is because of our successful lawsuit and the analysis we've done on these records. You may recall that about a month ago, there was the initial revelation that Lois Lerner was communicating with the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, targeting various groups. And then there was a one-week break, and then a week after that, we had the second set of emails showing Lois Lerner looking for a criminal indictment and prosecution of a 501c4 organization to teach them a lesson. Those are her words. And Congress received none of those. And here's the reason why. Congress is involved in a political game where they send sharply worded letters back and forth to each other with no real effects, no real enforcement. Our approach is a legal approach, not a political approach. And our legal approach, by going into court in front of a federal judge, makes the agency pay attention, makes them produce records. And that's why we've been able to move the ball so much further down the field than Congress.
So where do we go from here, Chris?
There's more documents on the way. What's interesting is that no government attorney has made any representations to us concerning the unavailability of email records. So I have a question in the back of my head that says, well, gee, if they're doing this sort of grandstanding, oh, gee, we lost everything. I mean, the whole world knows they back everything up, right? I mean, this is not a surprise. This is not, 1975 where we're struggling with the concept of, this new electronic communications. So all their emails are backed up, and no one denies that. The fact that her hard drive is gone or shot or whatever, to me, is obstruction of justice, and it would be great to get some discovery on that, get some sworn declarations from people as to what they did or didn't do with that particular device. But nonetheless, everything that they do is required to be backed up. There's a law. There's three federal laws and a handful of regulations governing the IRS and their record communications. So they're there. It's just a matter of getting them. And we will. We don't forget. We don't go away. We litigate cases for 10, 15 years. We will not forget or give up on this. We'll continue to drive down on it long after Congress has moved on to the next, bright, shiny object that gets their attention.
Speaking of which, Chris Farrell with us, Judicial Watch, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. This is the battle that you fight, that I fight daily. Chris, this is stuff that has never gone on, I believe, in American history. And yet we have people that, as you said, they're going on with their lives, but they should be darn right disturbed that their privacy, their freedom of speech, of organization has been prosecuted by this government.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a case where the Obama administration has gone after political opponents using the IRS as a weapon. There's no other way to express it. There's no other – I mean, you can put lipstick on the pig, but all it does is make the pig angry, right? There's no other way to describe or explain this other than the political use of the IRS to suppress political opponents. And while they're being manipulated and used that way, the other half of the equation that everyone needs to remember is, or ask yourself the question, what is the enforcement arm of the government for Obamacare? And the answer is the IRS.
Exactly. And here we have this going on, and your friend Eric Holder just kind of sits back, and the president kind of sits back, and they make some partisan charges, and we move on to the next circus.
Yeah, the arrogance is just unbelievable. I mean, there's nothing like it in memory, at least in my memory. I'm 53 years old, and I can't think of anything else like this. I mean, the Clintons lied, but they weren't ideologues. They were just looking to line their pockets, right?
Right.
They were looking to monetize and collect on every act of government that they could figure out for themselves. So whether it was pardons or access to trade missions, you know, they were going to jam their pockets with cash. This is different. This is an ideological assault. These are hard over leftists, and the president's delivering on his campaign promise. He promised a fundamental transformation, and he is delivering big time.
What about the Bergdahl situation?
Yeah, I think way too much attention is paid to Bergdahl. I think he's kind of a Fruit Loop. I think what's much more important are the five guys we gave away. I think the attention should be focused on how and why and who made the decisions and how those five were identified and what the justification for it was. Those five terrorists pose a grave and immediate threat to our country. They're sitting in a hotel room in Qatar with laptops and cell phones organizing the next strike on America. And Bergdahl himself, like I said, I think he's a Fruit Loop. I think, you know, he's a troubled individual. He should be ignored, frankly, or let real justice have its way with him through the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But the real threat are the five bad guys that they let go.
Chris Farrell, to be continued. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
On Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men.
Men, 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 manly men.
Men, 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 manly men.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Dave Burnett with us for the Manly Man segment. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
You know, coming up, my favorite day, the longest day of the year, the first day of summer, the summer solstice. Why? Because then the days start getting shorter right after that, and it'll be time once again very soon, October. We start going back to, you know, no sunlight, blah, blah, blah. Well, not really no sunlight.
I was going to say, wow, looking for the nuclear winter.
That's a little extreme. It's just that it's such a challenge. To try and go to bed and sleep during these times, those of us that get up early.
Hey, see, it doesn't bother me. It just, maybe I've just been doing it long enough. Doesn't bother me.
I think it's a little different for me, just because in other parts of the country, it just doesn't stay light till 10:30 at night.
It is different. I guess because really we should be in the Pacific time zone, but we're right on that edge, and so they stick us in the Mountain time zone.
You know, and on the map, we look a lot closer to the Pacific time zone than we are. Mm-hmm. It just takes forever to get there, but, or at least that 55 miles an hour that you have to drive through Oregon, maybe that's it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we're not far off. I mean, Moscow, that area, they're in the Pacific time zone. So, you know, but you look at places like, I'm trying to think, is Vegas in, are they in the Pacific?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in the Pacific. So, you know, yeah, I don't know. It's that tough thing. And they get the little slice of jackpot that gets put in the Mountain time zone, and you head south of there, and then they're in the Pacific. So it's a mess on the border, but, you know, get some eye shades, put some tinfoil on the window, be Elvis, one of those things.
Yeah. It's still, though, it's even though I'm more diligent this year than I have been in years past, it's still very, very tough. I'll go to bed at 7:30 at night, and still I can't sleep. Even though I've got everything blacked out, it's just tough.
Yeah. Speaking of not sleeping, and I do need to mention this morning, evacuation of that one block area up on the bench near Hillcrest Country Club. A car went into a house on Cleveland, sheared off the gas main, and so they have a gas situation. So all of the homes south of Nez Perce, north of Limhi, west of Latah, and east of Roosevelt have been evacuated. Everyone moved, speaking of not sleeping, everyone moved to Whitney Elementary School as they get that gas line fixed and all the problems that go with that. So you got that going on this morning. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. If you're in that block, you're aware of it because you're sitting at Whitney Elementary School at 5:41 in the morning wondering, what the heck? So that's right near Hillcrest Country Club.
And good to know.
Yeah. Just keeping you up to date ahead of all of the Jabroni news stations.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because I really don't see a lot of people covering that, but I guess we'll digress.
They will. They'll be covering here in about 10 minutes. You wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting back to this story, though, about what's going on the border, man. Did you see the pictures on Drudge?
I have not checked out Drudge yet. Been busy with the other thing. But what's going on?
Actually, it was yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So it's still going. Did you check it out yesterday at all?
Not afternoon, no.
All right. Well, you've got these I think it was even on in the morning. You got this picture of this guy from Central America just covered in lumps or measles or chicken pox and I guess the diseases, scabies, chicken pox, you just name it, all these diseases that we've handled in this country, they're just flowing in here with their diseases. And it's so bad that we can't even handle them. Then they have some diseases that we've already eradicated here, and people wonder whether or not we have the buildup, the immunity to handle it.
We don't. It's pretty simple. How would you like to be an emergency room worker at a hospital and in McAllen, Texas, or Brownsville, or El Paso? That would just be a nightmare.
It is, and you just start talking about this public health situation, and you have the President of the United States here at 580KIDO basically saying that they have to go, and he really means it this time. Yeah, you really wonder. The borders aren't being secured, and as we've said, the Republicans are just as bad as the Democrats because they keep saying that, well, once we get the border secure, you don't need a new law to secure the borders. Just enforce the ones you have.
Again, with our government, that's the frustrating thing, is that, so many times we have laws that work. They don't, they don't enforce those laws and then want different laws. I just don't get it.
Well, and look at the old controversy over Arizona 1070. In fact, that was just mirroring federal law, and people said that they were racist, they were this, they were that, but nobody went after the federal law that hasn't been enforced. It was just a state version of the federal immigration law.
Yeah, it's a mess. Didn't we send Joe Biden down to Guatemala to tell him to knock it off?
Yeah, well,
because I'm sure they took him seriously.
Well, everybody takes...
Jumping Joe.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, stand up! No, never mind.
Exactly. Come on, Joe. Oh, sorry, Joe. You can't stand up. All right, so we have that going on. Here's something that I've got. Let's see. My computer just crashed. Let's see if we can get it back. It was on the Kevin Miller hot list the other day, not the Megan Smacks Cheney one, but it was, I think a couple days ago, it was the Hillary Clinton-Barack Obama one. And this is about 3 minutes, but I think it's worthwhile. It has to do with Sergeant Bergdahl.
Thank you. I'll note that in 1944, when we did a prisoner exchange, it was with the Nazis, and of course that war continued for another year.
Would the gentleman yield?
Yeah, I'll yield.
Would the gentleman also recognize that the Nazi government at that time represented Germany as a nation state?
Yeah, but if
okay,
you think
but
that...
But the Al-Qaeda never represented anyone as a nation state.
Al-Qaeda did control and govern... with the acquiescence of the United States, the vast majority of Afghanistan until 9/11. But more importantly, if you want to create groups that are an anathema to the United States, I'd put the Nazis right at the top.
Well, I think
in any case, I have not yielded any further. And Dr. Jacobson, only an investigation is going to disclose the real facts behind Sergeant Bergdahl's disappearance and his capture, but we've heard substantial evidence that Sergeant Bergdahl acted in an inappropriate and an inexplicable manner. Can you describe the kinds of stresses that somebody in Sergeant Bergdahl would have faced in Afghanistan, and whether that would cause someone, not everyone, but some, to act in an inexplicable manner? I realize that the vast majority of our soldiers, Marines, etc., are subjected to those pressures and do not act inexplicably.
Can I have permission to speak?
Yes.
Well, you're asking Dr. Jacobson what situation Bergdahl was in over there. I was with Bergdahl at the same location. I could give you a firsthand account of exactly what Bergdahl was going through because I went through the exact same conditions.
Well, I'll ask you then to respond to the question first and then Dr. Jacobson to respond second. I was asking more in a general sphere as to what you face in Afghanistan, but obviously you know the specifics.
This isn't going to be good.
We were at an observation post. It was very primitive. We had to eat meals ready to eat, which are heated up with water. It was very hot, very dirty, went without showers for certain days, didn't get phone calls or any comforts of home, but it didn't affect anybody else there. We all continued the mission and upheld our oath. Everybody deals with mental issues in some form or another if they deploy to Afghanistan or Iraq, and everybody else still came back from that same platoon. Nobody else deserted on their own. So there's nothing, in my opinion, that was so bad that forced him to walk off on his own accord. Caused by anything going on over there. He walked off on his own accord.
There you have it.
So soldier there saying they were cut off, no showers, having to eat the meal ready, deserted, primitive, but nobody else walked off.
Well, you've seen that DVD I've talked about for 27 years at 580KIDO, Outpost Rest Repo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that pretty much describes what it was like there. It's primitive. You have your old-fashioned latrines. You may have some modern devices like gaming and stuff, but you are pretty much kind of like the old West. You're out on these forts, these forward operating bases.
And so and we don't know. We're assuming that played a part in it, but we don't know, do we?
Well, based on the conversations I've had with the Bergdahls, and based on, some published reports, the unit had issues, but really what unit hasn't had their own issues? And Dave Burnett, you being the arbiter of truth here this morning at 580KIDO, I'm going to ask you a question. And I know, once again, I'll give you the Dave Burnett disclaimer. You have no problem ever pointing out when I'm wrong or when you perceive that I'm wrong.
Never. Happy to do it.
So here's another opportunity, a Friday morning gift for you. Clearly, Sergeant Bergdahl had problems. He was in the Coast Guard for 26 days. He was discharged. He was allowed to join the Army and join a combat unit. And again, according to declassified military documents that have been published reports, that he wandered off the post in California. This wasn't the first time in Afghanistan that I guess he wandered off the post.
No, he'd done it before.
And when he went to his commander and said, and I understand the military culture. I get that to a degree. Don't agree with it, but that's why I was a lousy troop. However, when you go to your commander and you say, do you mind if I leave? Well, just you don't take your weapon and don't take your night vision. And then I don't care or whatever. So the story goes. As a commander, as someone who is in charge with the health and welfare of my men, based on what I've seen and heard, all of a sudden, I'm putting him on lockdown and restrictive duty. I'm not letting him just wander around. And my point is does the command, does the unit bear any responsibility, or was it Bo decided to be Bo?
Well, I think we are all responsible ultimately for what we do. I mean, I could go to you and say, Kev, I need some money. Should I rob a bank on the way home? I mean, you probably have a responsibility to say, no, Dave, and then, tell the boss, hey, we need to keep an eye on Dave. I think he's going to rob a bank on the way home. And, I mean, ultimately, if I decide to rob a bank on the way home, that's on me. But I would think if I had told you that or our boss, if I told our boss, I think I'm going to rob a bank on the way home, I would think that, yeah, there's a certain amount that you should say, It's much the same that happens in school shootings sometimes. The kids involved in it will give clues and say, I think I'm going to shoot up this school. And if people go, oh, yeah, whatever. And then it happens, it goes, man, we saw all the signs and didn't do anything. So I think there is some responsibility, but ultimately, you're responsible for your own actions.
True.
Was that an answer?
It is, but remember, the military, you're not seen as a person. You're seen as individual property.
Yeah.
If you harm yourself, they prosecute you for damaging Army property.
Yeah, and having never been in the military, I don't understand that culture, and I'll say it right up front.
Well, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine in Massachusetts about it, and I said, well, what do you think of Bergdahl? Well, most of the country views him as a traitor. And I don't know why I'm soft on this. I'm not a soft type of person except for my physique. But I just keep saying, and maybe because, you know, I almost killed myself doing that walk, I just think there's more to it. And maybe I'm trying to rationalize it.
Well, see, I guess for me personally, I have trouble with the word traitor when people call him a traitor. I think he made a real bad choice. If he was a traitor, and again, I go back to this, if Bergdahl was a traitor and had switched and flipped over and was helping the Taliban, they would have released photos of him with an automatic weapon firing shots in the air, you know, going Akbar Allah or whatever. And
I think it's Allah Akbar.
Whichever. Whatever. So
would they have been going, woo?
Oh, sorry. Well, I mean, they would have shown pictures of him actively involved. That would have been more humiliating. That would have been more tougher on the spirits of American troops there,
right?
To see him, you know, brandishing a weapon and you know, building bombs. Instead, we always saw him meagerly eating or sitting, you know, curled up in the corner. That doesn't okay. So did he walk off and make a mistake? Yeah, probably. I'm guessing within 45 minutes he probably went, uh-oh, bad choice, too late. But again, that is just me assuming a lot.
Well, we like to assume.
Yes, we do. Again, you know, we'll find out as it plays out. It's in the military court.
I didn't even get to ask you about that boondoggle deal for the naming rights.
The boondoggle deal.
Of the Bronco Stadium.
Oh, well, we'll save that for another day, I guess.
I keep wanting to because I know you're going to fight me on that one.
Oh, well, I don't know what the fight is. Well, I just have one question as to why it wasn't being made public to the State Board of Education. I do have a question about that, but
obviously somebody thought they had something to hide.
I don't know. We're going to have to assume again. I do know this, your traffic now as you're headed up Highway 54.
Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
This just in, according to some people, Barry Peterson is still the chairman of the State GOP, big meeting last night. We're chasing Barry. Hopefully we'll get Barry on. We'll have Mike Tracy on as well, and we'll hear from the participants. Much more on that coming up, plus the high cost of gas coming up this summer. Let's get you to work safely. And don't forget Fox News on the radio with the latest. If you're just wondering who won the House majorityship, it wasn't Congressman Labrador. We have complete coverage on his attempted bid to be the majority leader at 580KIDO.com. Under Labrador loses but wins the Washington game. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.